Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Yeah. Y'all already know what time it is. Philly Fridays in the house. Y'all already know you pulled up a seat. You got your notepads out. You scheduled your appointment. But you showed up early, so you were right on time. Right on time. For your session of office hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. And I want y'all to show some appreciation tonight. We have a very, very special program going on tonight. If anybody saw the thumbnail, you already know I am not riding alone. Just let y'all know, wherever I go, I bring my people with me. So let's get into it. First of all, it is about 1 minute after the hour. Here in the city of Philadelphia, brotherly love. The temperature outside is a humidifying 82 degrees on this warm evening. It looked like we were about to get some storms, and that might still be in the forecast. So make sure that you wear your ponchos. Make sure you have your umbrellas out. And, your rubber ducky shoes. Stay dry, my friend. So, we're here tonight. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Friday. Shout out to everybody and the dope-ass shows that this network produces. And the rumbling is in the air that we're from. So let's see where this takes us. It's been a wild week, man. It's been a wild, wild week. We have had so many things, wild, crazy distractions. We've seen so much dysfunction and chaos on the front page of the thing. But we're here to bring things back. We're here to bring some normalcy back, some balance back to the force. The dark side has been winning too long. So here we come, the Jedis of this age and era. On a more somber note, I lost a dear friend this week. A friend of 20 years. A good brother, good solid brother, good hearted brother. And he succumbed to his illnesses. And I just received word this morning that he is no longer with us in this realm. Those of you who know us that believe in the forces and the higher power, especially those of us who practice African spiritual culture, we already know that, when you leave this transition to another realm. So in this transition, I want to wish my friend peace and power, and may our ancestors welcome him to the other side, my good friend Eric Coleman. I saw something, though, you know, and it's something I want to make speak to. But I know when y'all listen to the show, you say, wow, you have a lot of critique, especially when you talk about relationships and you talk about some of the things that go on between black men and black women. I want to speak to something, though, and I actually wrote about it on Facebook and Facebook books. So I want to read that real quick before we get into the show, if you don't mind. I saw something truly amazing today. As I visited a dear friend who unfortunately suffered a tremendous blow to his health, leaving him in pretty rough shape, I realized something that would sit with me till my dying days. I was able to observe and appreciate the woman for which he called his wife for at least 30 years. This woman has been the true testimony of what devotion really is really about. The type of love that's committed, unselfish, unwavering during the toughest of times. It's about as close to unconditional love that I've ever seen. And my friend, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever know. But in that moment, I realized that if I can't have or share that type of devotion, then I will happily stroll off into the sunset alone. That type of genuine love is so rare these days. As much as I hate to see my good friend or see good people suffer, God blessed him with that rare gift that so many of us in this superficial world will never know. Rest in paradise, my good friend, Eric Hall. So, getting back to the gist of what we're going to talk about tonight, I have another dear friend that is sharing his airwaves with me tonight. Now, I've seen this sister sometime, it might even have been like somewhat, like close to a decade ago, on social media. And when I saw her, I said, wow, I recognize her face. Then it dawned on me. This sister was a model whose image was plastering the cover of a lot of local urban novels, specifically one by a brother named Quan from out of, I believe it was Jersey City, New Jersey. And so I started watching the videos. I said, wow, this sister actually has something to say. And I befriended her on social media, reached out to her, and I couldn't believe how down to earth this sister was. And so we would, you know, chat from time to time, this, that, and the other. Nothing crazy. Just, you know, building on what we believe was needed to empower our community. It was genuine. And I'm going to tell you how genuine it was. When this sister got married, conversation, I would start off talking to her on the phone, and then my good brother would get on the phone, and then me and him would talk and build for another 3 hours. Those were some good times. So I thought so highly of her that when I was putting together my film, The Independence Day Project, I knew I had to have her put her standpoint. So I contacted her. We tried to figure out that I didn't get the budget that a lot of other people got. So a lot of my friends who were in the Independence Day Project could send me their videos. And she put together a clip that is actually featured in one of the transitional parts of the movie. So, without further ado, I want to introduce my sister, this powerful force. My good sister, Talia Jones. What's
going
on?
Thank you for
on,
having
sis?
Me. Hey, oh. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to vibe with you today. Great.
Oh, listen, the pleasure's all mine. You know, it's funny because it's been a little while since we had a chance to talk. And then when we picked up, it was like it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Tell the people a little bit about yourself, Talia. Tell them, you know, just give me your rundown.
Yeah. Well, you know, I, as Mr. Tone Jones has laid out, about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that, I was doing this video thing, podcasting thing, kind of like a vlogging. I guess that's what they used to call it, vlogging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, it took off faster than I anticipated because I didn't really have a direction. I just had a lot to say, a lot I wanted to put out there. So it grew faster than what I was ready for. And in the process of building up that platform, primarily on Facebook, I met my husband, got married, life got really busy. So I put the content development down for several years and I'm ready to come back. But I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a mother of four. I have three boys and a one-year-old daughter. And, you know, I'm just ready to get back into this because I've been paying attention to a lot of the content that's out there, a lot that's going viral, a lot of the conversations that people are having. And what I'm realizing is not a lot of people get to the root of the problem like you do. So that's why I'm here today, to hopefully inspire people to think a little bit more, do more research, and, you know, to throw a couple of pieces of the puzzle out there so we can put this puzzle together so we can really understand what's going on and how to improve our lives and improve the lives of the youth.
Well, wait a minute. You said I get to the bottom of it. What?
Yeah, you do a very good job of tying together the history that links what's going on in the present and what's to come in the future. And I think a lot of people miss those things. We get really focused on to the symptom of the issues of today. We don't really understand the cause and what the solution is.
You know, and it's ironic, right? Because mm-hmm. My first, like, when I really decided that this was going to be something that I was going to dedicate my life to. And that's, it's not a fad, right? This is a lifestyle. I had a conversation with a good brother, my brother, Minister Inky, out of New York. And I said, bro, why is it that we have all this consciousness, right? We had the brothers meeting on, meeting up on 25th Street up in New York. What they call it, 20th Street. It's 125th Street. We had the sessions going on at Black and Nobel here in Philadelphia. I knew of the fact that they were building down in Washington, D.C., House of Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Also knew that they were building down in Atlanta. I'm saying to myself, why isn't this coming together? And the brother said, because it's profitable for it not to come together.
Right.
Blew my mind.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I don't necessarily look at this from a perspective of profit. I look at this from the perspective of I have, at the time, two nephews. Since then, I have two godsons. I wasn't blessed to have any children of my own, but I saw the village. And the children in the village is children that belong to me. And I said, how can I look these babies in the face when they get older and they are looking at me and asking me, what could I do to create a path for them and I would say nothing. I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually the genesis of the Independence Day Project. Because as we're sitting here and people are worried about affirmative action, which really is not going to affect us too much, and worried about all these other things, the Independence Day Project was about us building for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I was having conversations with those young people, going into the classrooms, going into the schools in the rougher parts of Philadelphia, and having these conversations with these young brothers and sisters, and they asked me, okay, we did it. Now what do we do? And I ain't gonna lie, the first time they asked me, I didn't have an answer. And they set us on this journey. And so one of the things I want to talk about, because me and you always talk about what this means for our future foundations and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I have brought up nation building, right? And I think that's probably the most visceral reaction I've ever gotten out of you. Your response to nation building. So tell them what you said to me when I said, you know, we should be thinking about nation building principles and things of that nature.
Yeah, well, my idea of nation building has evolved over the years, but my initial reaction is you can't build a nation with a group of people that don't have a consolidated system of values. That's something that my husband speaks to extensively. If you don't have a consolidated system of values, there is no nation. If one man thinks that it is absolutely acceptable to smack his wife when she doesn't do what he says, but another man does not agree with that, how do you reconcile that? How do you build a nation where 50% of the men want to beat their wives and 50% of the men don't? How do you reconcile if somebody says that underage children should have sexual relations, can have sexual relations with adults? You have people that think that that's okay, and then you have people who don't think that that's okay. Some of us agree with whooping our kids. Some of us don't. Some of us want to praise Jesus. Well, some of us want to pray, you know, want to do Islam. Some of us want to be traditional. So how do you reconcile these things and build a nation when the values conflict with one another?
And that sat me on my back pockets for a second, y'all. I'm not gonna lie. Because, I mean, it's something that we talk about, but it's always good to hear from another person's mouth, because when you hear it, another person's perspective on it, it's sort of, it's sobering. And that means we have a lot of work to do, because no matter what we do, we still have children that are going to walk into these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to experience life. They're going to come to places where we should have built for them, designed for them, secured for them, insulated for them. And we're still not on page with the simplest of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not even going to get into the riffraff that took place on social media this week with the concert. That'll be a show on its own, right? But, right, that'll be a show on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that you brought up today, this want to be the main thing we focus on today, because, you know, we get right down to it, is, you know, when we were talking about you coming on the show, and I asked you, what are some of the pertinent issues? One of the things that you brought up was the sexualizing of our children in healthcare, in schools,
mm-hmm.
and the media,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
how that is a part of our consolidation and chaos, which is drifting us away from our traditional value systems.
Yeah.
So So let's get into that. Because I think that's something that hits right home in terms of where we need to be focused in protecting our bases.
Absolutely. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. I don't know if you could hear that.
No, that's the conversion. That's the conversion from, yeah, so don't worry. Just keep talking through it. That's the conversion that, you know, because we use our system. So when the lines go through our system, it's converted into a digital record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Trust me, I hear it too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, the sexualizing of our children has been something that's been top of mind for me as of late, primarily because of everything that's going on in the LGBTQ community. But what I had to recognize and what I put together is what led up to this. You know, a lot of people are kind of like deer in the headlights right now with the schools wanting to be able to transition your children, you know, do gender transition therapy and have your child live a double life while they're at school. You know, they're at home, you call her Lisa, but when she goes to school, her name's Leon, and you have no idea, and they don't have to tell you this, right? But there were things that have taken place back in, you know, when I was a child that have helped what is going on today become a reality. So,
wow.
and you know, this is a multi-layered, this is a very complex issue because...
Disconnected.
Sorry about that. Say that again?
Mm-hmm. I was saying this is a very complex and multi-layered issue because we have healthcare, we have entertainment or media, and we have the schools all playing their role. I want to give out a vocabulary word, and I want everybody to keep this top of mind, just store it in the back of your mind, but I need you to understand what this is, because this is going to tie a lot of things together. Especially with a lot of the gripes, particularly that men have with today's so-called modern women. There is a term called hybristophilia. Hybristophilia, hybristophilia. That is the phenomenon of an individual being sexually aroused by a criminal offender.
Wait, say that again?
Hybristophilia is the phenomenon of an individual being sexually aroused by a criminal offender a criminal offender. Okay? So I'm going to dig into this a little bit. Hear me out. Because this is important. Hybristophilia, I'm going to repeat it one more time, is the phenomenon of an individual being sexually aroused by a criminal offender. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about, I mean, this is related to those, you know, those weird women we see on the news that develop romantic relationships with Ted Bundy and Charles Manson, you know, these inmates. But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that. Okay. Hybristophilia is also the reason studies basically show that women in particular who have a history in their childhood of being abused, they tend to choose sexual and romantic partners with a criminal and aggressive profile. This is what continues the pattern of abuse. This is why we hear of these girls who end up in abusive relationships. Their moms were in abusive relationships. Their grandmothers were in abusive relationships. And 9 times out of 10, that woman's child, if she has a daughter, will most likely be in an abusive relationship. Because this is a psychological issue that is imposed on somebody through childhood abuse. And it could be any kind of abuse. It could be violent abuse. It could be sexual abuse. It could be neglect. And you have to remember how impactful various events have on a child's mind, especially in their first 5 years of life, because that sets the tone for the rest of what the rest of their life is going to be. Okay, so that's hyperstophilia. It's very, very, very common, especially in the Black community. Now, I'm sure you've heard of men complaining about why modern day girls complain about, you know, how they're being treated by men. They want the Pookies and the Ray Rays, the dudes that are running the streets, the dudes that end up using and abusing them. 9 times out of 10, most of those girls that want to be with those kind of guys have experienced some form of abuse in their childhood. Okay. Mm. So
wow.
Go ahead.
I'm listening.
So let's go back to the 1990s. Okay. Let's say you have a 12-year-old girl who has a history of being sexually abused multiple times throughout her childhood. This 12-year-old girl has access to reading material that is marketed to her, reading material like 17 magazine. She has access to BET, MTV, all of the music video channels. We know what was in music videos, you know, back then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
so she's already had sexual experiences before the age of 12. Now she's going through puberty. Her body's changing. She's looking more and more like a grown woman. She's getting attention from men, teenage boys, maybe even females. Okay?
Uh-huh.
She's growing up in a broken household. No one is talking to her about sex. No one is getting her the help that she needs, the mental health help that she needs. She's not getting counseling or therapy from any of her childhood traumas. She's a part of a clique of girls who all also have a similar upbringing and similar family dynamic. And you know what they have the ability to do once they decide they want to have sex? They can walk into any clinic, any Planned Parenthood clinic. They could go to their own primary care doctor and request birth control.
Wait. Birth control without any oversight.
Without any parental oversight.
Wow.
Without any parental consent. And these doctors will have conversations with your 12, 13, 14-year-old daughter. They will talk to them about sex. They will make your child feel comfortable with telling them things that they won't even tell you as their parent, which they should be telling you, but they're not. And this doctor will affirm your child's desire to have sex. And they will congratulate your child for doing what they call the right thing by getting on birth control. They will not tell your child to wait until marriage. They will not promote abstinence. They will promote this false idea of safe sex, because the only safe sex is no sex. And they will put your child on birth control. They will give your child birth control that you will never find. You won't find the pills because there will be no pill. They will put your child on a shot that she only has to get every 3 months.
The depot shot, right?
The depot shot, yes. And you will never know anything about it. They will tell your child to watch her diet, to exercise, so she doesn't gain weight. That way you never have any idea that something could be wrong with your daughter. They will help her cover her tracks from you. And
that's
convince
sinister.
You that she can have sex freely. That is what doctors can and do. They do this.
Yo, wait a minute. So, because I'm going to come back to the hyperstophilia and the medics. But, see, I've known about what you're saying in regards to underage or you know, if you're under 18, right? In Pennsylvania, the right to consent to sex is the age of 14. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's, when you're talking about medical procedures, when you're talking about being able to make, like, gender transitioning decisions, which is a huge thing. Like, you know, I'm just, do your life, whatever. But a child is still not fully developed hormonally.
Right.
And there's been a lot of, you know, stories coming out lately with young people who made that decision, and now they're, you know, they're pretty much in a depressed state because they feel as though they were let down. They feel as though their parent didn't protect them against their own worst interests, things of that nature. And and I've seen that. And then talking about the promotion of sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked on the phone about this earlier this week. One of the things that I thought that was interesting, you don't really recognize it when you're a part of it.
No.
When you're being used, like you're the guinea pig.
No.
I was one of the people in my high school that was chosen on this safe sex campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It was fueled by the Magic Johnson press conference where he stated that he was HIV positive.
Yeah.
And that sort of like ushered in this whole craze around protective sex.
Yeah. The Wrap It Up campaign.
Right, right.
It was everywhere.
You know, I took pictures to be on a billboard. Safe sex billboard. Fortunately, I wasn't one of the ones on that billboard, but somebody else that I grew up with, brother, he still lives around here, was on that billboard in like 1991.
Yeah.
And I think one of the fascinating things that we spoke of is how the push out, how it went from, we want to protect you against STDs, we want to protect you against pregnancies and things of that nature, to, well, just practice safe sex. And it was almost endorsing, it was endorsing sex.
Yeah.
By teens.
Yeah.
I went to high school here in Philadelphia, Simon Gratz High School, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right in North Philly. We had a daycare in the basement.
Yeah.
Because it was an epidemic at that particular time with so many teenage mothers. The mothers would get to school 15 minutes early, and then they would get to leave 15 minutes early to go to the daycare to bring their child home.
Yeah, Carl, my mom, the school that she went to, which is a school I ended up going to, had a daycare in it. She had my brother when she was 14 or 15 years old.
Wow.
I ended up going to that same school, but the daycare was gone by the time I got there. But yeah, a big, big, big thing down in Tucson, Arizona. Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, and then, we, you know, because right around the time, right before I actually started, before I started linking up with people, I used to write a blog, right? We talked about video blogs earlier. I used to write a blog, a conspiracy blog called The Rabbit Hole.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the topics I covered in The Rabbit Hole was the over-sexualization of children through the media. Specifically, Disney Network, Nickelodeon, and what they were producing. And that was prior to, Miley Cyrus was one of the people I was talking about. And this was prior to her sexploits later on, right? But it was so predictable because of the content that was presented. This content came on specifically between the hours of 3 and 5, and it was targeting children. And so, you know, my generation was the latchkey kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So prior to this, now we're second generation latchkey kids. We're second generation survivors of the crack cocaine epidemic.
Right.
So a lot of broken homes. still had a lot of children that were coming home to empty houses. And there was a study that was done that said most children, teenage pregnancies, the actual act that produces the child took place between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. after school, but before mom or dad would get home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes complete sense. I remember being 12, 13, 14. I remember what was happening back then. And I also remember how easy it was to get access to everything that you needed to have sex. I remember learning about sex and reading magazines, like 17 magazines. This is something else that is helping children, validating children having sex. 17 magazine has been around since 1944. It targets teenage girls under the age of 17. They cover topics like fashion, beauty, relationships, and sexual advice. Young girls are getting sexual advice from 17 magazine. Now, most parents did not know this because they don't put the sexual content of what's in the magazine. They don't highlight it on the cover. They make the cover look very teenish. It's pink with pictures of Britney Spears and lipstick and hair brushes. Like, they make it look very innocent. But when you open that book, there is so much content in there about body image, sexuality, learning about different sexual acts. I remember reading about oral sex, anal sex, vaginal sex, digital sex.
See, I never read 17 magazine.
I did. I had a subscription. It came to me every month in the mail.
Oh. But it makes perfect sense. And I'm gonna do something real quick while we're here. I'm gonna check and see the connection between 17 magazine and Cosmopolitan magazine.
Oh, that's what you lead into. Once you get to college age, you graduate to your Cosmo and your Glamour magazines, because then they do have the sexual content highlighted on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Cosmopolitan is very interesting because they would just identify as helping promote the sexual revolution and matching with the women's suffrage movement, and as well as the free sex movement, like sexual liberation movement. And this was done in conspiracy and in the 70s with 17, I believe it was 17 particular groups that identified creating this whole notion of this, what we now call city girls, right? It started off as Sex in the City, but it's city girls. Where they would put these stories in these magazines, and they would have it in, like, you know, they didn't want to mention New York because it was just like, okay, it's only going to appeal to New Yorkers. But if I say I'm in Omaha, Nebraska, and this sex campaign took place, if I say I'm over here, I'm over there, then it would appeal to non-traditional women. But the appeal was to make women chase their sexual fantasies through this thing called sexual liberation in their 20s, pursue their careers, put aside family life until their mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
But by that particular time, you're talking about geriatric pregnancy. By that particular time, you're talking about a bunch of unsatisfied, angry, and you created a lot of bitterness in women. And I've seen women who openly said, I am so upset that society lied to me, you know, about these particular things. And so when I hear you break it down to 17, like 17 is not a magazine I would have read. Now, I'm not going to lie, I would find a way to get a Playboy or a Hustler magazine. Well, back then, if you want a newsstand, it's Brown Bunny, right?
Yeah.
You know,
it was more difficult, though. You actually had to put an effort to get a hold of those magazines.
Right.
they didn't really make magazines for boys because, you know, boys, you guys were already sexualized at a young age. You guys were already horny and just really just out of control. They had to get the girls to figure out how to create that phenomenon.
Yes, because even in biology class, it taught that most young ladies don't even develop the sensitivity in their vaginal region to enjoy sex until they're at least in their, in their 20s.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm not sure about now with all what's going on with hormone therapy and the way they sneak it into the foods and the way that children are developing nowadays, both female and male. I mean, you see, you know, growing up, we was trying our damnedest to get a goatee. Now these young brothers got full-fledged red beards in the seventh grade.
My son was born with a mustache, very prevalent mustache.
He was born with a mustache?
My son was born with a mustache.
See, this shit is out of control. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was, with the boys, it was always, especially in our sector, the boys were always taught that the road to manhood was through the vagina of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't become a man until you bust her chip.
Mm.
So it was like they were creating a nexus of where you would meet up in the middle.
Yeah.
And because, like, you were talking about, I want to pronounce this correctly. Hybristophilia.
Mm-hmm.
When he was talking about that, I was wondering, is there a male equivalent to that? Like, are there men out there looking for, you know, slasher chicks or queen pets?
Yeah, that term is not gender specific. It's when an individual is sexually aroused by being with a criminal offender. Obviously, you do see this more prevalent amongst women, but yes, there are definitely men that are attracted to women that have criminal tendencies.
And listen, y'all listening, this is going to be a series, y'all. We ain't going to get this all in tonight. I'm just letting y'all know now, we're just scratching the surface on this. So, it's funny you mention that, right? Because I love history, and I don't just do basic history. I like to learn stuff like, there was a series out called Cocaine Cowboys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Cocaine Cowboys?
I've heard of it. I never got a chance to watch it.
I'm telling you, you got to watch it. It's a fascinating series. It talks about how America was able, how the CIA was able to help fuel the pipeline from Colombia and Central and South America all the way to America. It even talks about, you know, the Oliver North scandals. But it really gets into, the second one talks about this woman by the name of Griselda Blanco.
Mm-hmm.
And she was known as the queen pen of cocaine.
Yeah. I think they made a movie about her, or they are making a movie about her.
No, they made a movie about her. They made a movie about her because she was featured in the Cocaine Cowboy series. So, she was the one who was the elder to Escobar.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the one that taught him how to become the world's biggest drug dealer, quote unquote drug dealer, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't believe he was. I believe the biggest drug dealer at that time happened to be the vice president of the United States, but I'm not going to say no names. but
wow,
there was a brother, like Griselda Blanco, she got locked up out in California. There was a brother by the name of Charles Cosby out in Oakland who made it his mission to get this woman to fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that he can be the cocaine king of the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
So when you said that, I say, wow. And I'm looking at that. I mean, this dude was sending her videos. This dude was sending her letters. She was getting them in the prison. They would have, like, quick sessions in the, yeah. In the stage area inside the prison. but he hunted her down.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that sounds a little bit different because that sounds like someone that is using maybe a female criminal tendencies and her power because he wants power for himself versus a woman that ends up getting involved with someone with a criminal or aggressive profile. It's not something that's done consciously. It is something that she is subconscious. It's a subconscious thing because she will naturally have an attraction to someone with criminal or aggressive profile. So she doesn't understand why she's attracted to those things. So this is why it takes psychological treatment to really dig into, you know, what these issues are. So it's not something that she would naturally, she's not going to say, I want to get with the hardest gangbanger, you know, in LA. She's just going to be like, I don't know why I like that shit so much, but I do. And then that's, she gets involved in it and then she gets beaten, you know, and then she has a child and that child grows up in a dysfunctional lifestyle. And that's how the cycle continues. So that's what we're talking about when we say hydrostophilia.
Okay. Now I can see that. Cause he definitely was that.
No, he saw an opportunity for power.
Right, right. He definitely saw opportunity. He slipped right into there too. And I studied Charles Manson.
Me too.
So yeah, I studied Charles Manson because a lot of people think that he was the psychopath lunatic, but Charles Manson was seen as a muse to the who's who's in the academic world, like the elite academic world. Out there in the California system of higher education. And not only that, like celebrities, he had access to everybody just wanted to be around Charlie. That was his name, Charlie. Everybody wanted to be around Charlie. And he was a failed musician. And but prior to that, I mean, so he was taking in sessions. The point I'm making is he was really like a pseudo-academic.
He was a master manipulator.
Right.
Like Jim Jones, master manipulator.
Right. But one of the things he said, and I'm going to come back to what we're talking about. He was like, one of the reasons why he generated this whole push for health and skelter, the race war, the preemptive strike in the race war, was that he understood that black people were pretty much the closest you can get to God, and we were the most spiritual people on the planet. And if we ever realized who we were, then we would be unstoppable. We'd be an unstoppable force. So he was trying to create a preemptive strike by doing those murders and trying to frame them up as if black people were the ones going into Beverly Hills killing those folks. And when they asked, but I realized one thing. We realized that black people, because they're so spiritual, and connected to nature, that they were three times more likely to be influenced by fear.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking to strike fear into the black community. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they would be less likely to respond to any of our aggressions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just amazing. When you talk about Charles Manson, I think about the girls that would come to, like, these were underage girls, like 14, 15-year-old girls that would cut their faces up and you know, just it's like they were in some type of trance and they would show up where he was and outside the courtroom and out on the streets, and like it was the weirdest shit ever. Like it was the most children of the corn shit I've ever seen in my life.
That's a very specific profile of person. That you have to be to be able to have that type of influence. But you also have to have a person that is broken to a certain degree to have that type of influence on them. He would take broken people. That's why they called themselves the family. These people that didn't have family, or they were cast out by their family for whatever reason. And he would bring them into what they called the family, which was really a cult.
Oh, yeah, 100% a cult.
Yeah.
And I want to jump into this real quick, because I know you brought it up, you brought this particular topic up for a different reason.
Yeah. I brought it up to really help to paint the picture of what's going on with today's so-called modern woman, or these young girls, the girls with the city girl mentality, the girls that are, you know, sexually promiscuous, because it's not like promiscuity is something new. Girls were promiscuous back in my day. I knew girls when I was in seventh and eighth grade that were having sex in the middle school bathroom stall. I saw a lot of things happen. But the thing is, we were in an environment that promoted these things to happen. You know, something else that comes to mind was a study that was done at Notre Dame. I found this article on the National Review. There was a study done by two economists at Notre Dame. They identified 22 school districts in 12 states across the country during the 90s that had a condom distribution program. Some of the school districts were amongst the largest in the country. This includes New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. And the study analyzed teen fertility data from over like almost 400 high population counties over a span of 19 years. And there was a range of demographic and economic factors that were very constant. And the research that they conducted, that, you know, with the condom distribution programs, the idea was that it would prevent teen pregnancy and STD spread. Okay. But the outcome was actually the opposite. Okay. So what ended up happening is there was an increase in teen pregnancy, as well as an increase in STDs in the counties where the condom distribution programs were. So what's interesting about that is...
Repeat that last part again.
All of the counties where they had the condom distribution programs to prevent pregnancy and STDs had an opposite effect. There were more teen pregnancies and more STD spread in the counties where they had the condom distribution programs for teens. So the condom distribution programs resulted in more teen sexual activity. The condom distribution programs encouraged sexual risk-taking. It enabled children to have sex. It gave children permission to have sex. You get what I'm saying?
No. I hear exactly what you're saying.
So as they pushed the condom distribution programs, there was less emphasis on programs that encouraged teens to delay sexual activity. They decided to basically stop pushing abstinence in the name of pushing the idea of safe sex. And while they pushed the idea of safe sex under the Wrap It Up campaign that was funded by the government, where do you think they got the money to get all of these condoms and put them in these schools?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And so this completely undermined parents who, you know, you may come from a religious household and you really hold true to the concept of no sex before marriage. These schools were undermining parents and sexualizing children. These We already know that the doctors undermine parents. They don't care about your religious affiliation, your religious beliefs, and wanting to keep your child a virgin and pure until marriage. They undermine the, so the doctors are undermining parents, the schools are undermining parents, and of course the media. The books that you, that were targeted toward young girls were talking to your daughters about having sex and encouraging your daughters to do so. So you know, I wonder where this city girl mentality comes from. It's manufactured through healthcare, education, and media. And don't let the girl also come from a broken home. It's a perfect storm.
Yeah.
A little girl can lust for the touch of a grown man if she wasn't already touched by a grown man before.
And then, you know, that's and we're gonna put a pin in this right here, because we're gonna follow up with this conversation, because I wanna delve into the social dynamics more so from the community perspective and the community, because you talked earlier about the lack of shared values, and then the control, the lack of control that we've had in terms of the term, our own determination, self-determination in regards to what we were going to pursue, how were we going to, what it meant to be Black, what it meant to be an African here in America, what it meant to be. And, you know, we've lost all of that. And I think a lot of that ties into, because let's just say if we had a community that was actually a functioning, strong community, it wouldn't allow for the penetration to put those programs in place. Because those programs mostly were in urban sectors, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I'm not sure if it was almost 400 different schools.
Okay.
I don't know if they were all urban.
I know Planned Parenthood was specifically placed in lower income, primarily Black neighborhoods and communities, and that was like ground zero for their distribution center for a lot of this stuff. You know, and that's something that, you know, you go to, and especially when you're dealing with the current situation right now, where particularly in the white community, they're dealing with a deficit in regards to their mortality rate and in terms of birthing children. So this is the conversation that we're going to have to continue. And because I think that there's a lot of layers here that need to be peeled back. And like you said, we get to the bottom of it. So, sister, I appreciate you spending this hour with me here on Fet Life Station, as we introduce you to our network. Do you have any last message, any last words for the listening audience?
You know, I will say the further we drift away from traditional values, the more chaotic life is going to be, you know, so that's something you might want to ponder on until next time.
Definitely, definitely. So, once again, y'all, my good sister, Talia Jones, and listen, man, between now and then, who knows, she might be back up and popping on a podcast, last podcast, whatever hour we go, got going, I'm fumbling. But I want to thank her for pulling up tonight.
Glad to be here. Can't wait to do it again.
All right, man. So, you know, and y'all know how to find us on Philly Fridays here on the Fet Life Station. And with that, let's take us home, good brother.
Angsta, from what I see, boo, it's a must we stay together forever. You see, cause ever is ever, and never ever would nobody do it better than the S. Oh yes, I guess you're blessed. I put the rocks on your fingers, earrings jingle, no more single. You got a man in your life, and I understand what you like. Your friends don't understand why you be singing me, but they don't understand that you love cheating me. The way I walk, the way I look, the way I talk, the way we make love in the dark. Some things in life were meant to be. I thank God above that you were sent for me. See, cause my point of view, it's all about you. You got to tell me what you wanna do.
Come into my life, boy, I adore you.
Ooh. I need you, need you.
Come into my life,
yeah.
Boy, I adore you.
Let's do it, let's do it.
Come into my life,
I'm down
boy,
with it.
I adore
yeah.
you. Ooh.
Come on, come on.
Come into my
yes.
life, boy, I adore you.
I got to do it.
Cause you fat up and you ever look neat. Say them and them all a rush cause them know you're unique. Girl, show you fat up and you ever look neat. Girl, them phenomenon, yo, we got so. Girl, just broke out and push your body out. Put your head up to floor and make it spread out, no doubt. Girl, you run the road to a paper, make us see your body flow. Make us spread out, no doubt. Girl, you run the road to a paper, make us see your body flow. Make us see you get up and wine, dirty wine. Cause you know you look good, you know you're fatting everywhere. Enough for them a rush you to them. You could take care, got the tight up on the hook, who made them and them said them love how you be doing it. Me girl just go all out,
all out.
See him so your thing set up and see him so your thing it took a start out. My girl go all out,
all out.
Many girl a try to say aight but them like get shot out. My girl go all out,
all out.
See him so your thing set up and see him so your thing it took a start out. My girl go all out,
all out.
When you a dirty wine see a try but I fall see you fall out,
fall out.
Many gyal a try to say aight, but them like get shot out. My girl go all out,
all out.
See him so your thing set up, I see him so your thing it took a start out. My girl go all out,
all out.
When you a dirty wine, see you try, but I fall, see you fall out. Gyal, cause you fight up and you ever look neat. Say them and them all a rush you, cause them know you unique. Gyal, show you fight up and you ever look neat. Enough gyal want fi rush you, but you know them can't do it. Gyal, show you hot up and you ever discreet. Enough gyal want fi lip up and flip up them big. Gyal, show you hot up and you full of prestige. Bad bread, girl, she fi brush up her teeth, girl, go all.